Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Dustin Sinclair, 19 years of combination experience, a captain with Rutherford County Fire Rescue in Tennessee on Rescue Engine 51, and cadre member with Dixie Firemanship. Dustin had an experience that forever changed his outlook on how the minimum standard failed him as a firefighter, because as the saying goes, you don't know what you don't know. I truly hope the listeners can listen to Dustin's story and ask yourself, what are you doing to become a better firefighter? With that, I present Mr. Dustin Sinclair.
My name is Dustin Sinclair. I am a captain on Rescue Engine 51 in Rutherford County, Tennessee. I've been in the fire service since September 22nd, 2005. Basically how I got started, I was just like that little kid that, you know, just had that cheesy dream, but you know, I remember walking down the street in Southern California with my mom, and we saw one of those open Seagrave engines that went down the street. And it was weird because looking back now, you know, I never pieced certain things together until later in life. But, you know, the Rodney King riots in Los Angeles were going on, and I lived, you know, just outside of Los Angeles in the Lakewood community, and didn't realize what was going on at the time. I remember smelling that odor, that sulfur smell, you know, from everything that was going on. And, you know, the Army personnel carriers were driving down the street enforcing curfews and all that. And I'm just like, well, that's crazy. But I remember seeing the fire engines quite a bit. And I was like, man, that's pretty cool. These guys hanging off the side, you know, sitting on top of the open cab or whatever. And then years, you know, obviously, you know, that was a pretty big year because, you know, we know that Backdraft came out not long after that, or maybe just before, something like that. So I remember watching that, just becoming obsessed with that movie. And, you know, growing up buying, you know, the Halloween costume every year that, you know, I want to be a fireman. And then obviously as you get older, I think your dreams change a little bit. Coming into high school, well, backtrack a little bit, in middle school, you know, 9/11 happened. And I remember seeing the attacks, and there was just something really ominous about those guys, you know, walking through that dust cloud. And I remember just being just again, like, why are these guys doing this? But knowing that that was their job. So you fast forward to high school, and it's like, okay, well, now I gotta be a little bit more serious about my career choices. You know, I was pretty serious about going into the Air Force at one point. Wasn't sure what I was going to do exactly, but I thought maybe firefighting would be cool. And an Air Force recruiter said, hey, why don't you join the Air Force, become a firefighter, because we train all of the firefighting agencies in the military. So that would be the cream of the crop. So I'm like, all right, I'll do that. Well, then career day happens, and I'm working in the guidance counselor's office as an aide. And she's like, hey, I got a treat for you. You're going to sit next to the the Air Force recruiter's booth. And then I got you a spot right next to the volunteer fire chief's booth. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Well, I ended up making friends with the guy that was running the booth from the volunteer fire department. And he ended up basically recruiting me as an explorer at 17 years old. So not even a week later, I'm working at a pizza place that's a block away from the firehouse. And my boss was, you know, like, basically became like my dad after my parents died. And he was like, hey, if you want to go check it out, you know, on a Thursday night, you know, we can cover your spot. So I walk down the street, I go to a meeting. Some of my best friends I was in church with, you know, were firefighters there too. So if Scott Hamilton's listening to this, he was one of the guys that kind of, you know, was encouraging me at the time to go. So I walk in and I meet Todd Davis again, the guy who was at the recruiter's office, Scott Hamilton, Corey Lowry, all those guys. And long story short, all of a sudden I just started hearing a bunch of tones going off, and I didn't know what that was. And then you see all the guys crossing their fingers like this, because if the tones kept going, it was a structure fire. And so they kept going. And long story short, it ended up being a countywide response for a very large house that ended up being a two and a half story with a walkout basement, fire blowing through the roof when we got there. And I think they called three counties in for help that night. So I'm riding on the first new engine apparatus, and we pull in the driveway. And I mean, it's just like a dream come true. And then I'll never forget, Scott Hamilton turns to me as we're pulling hose off the truck, and I'm running around like a chicken with head cut off. And he goes, hey, Dustin, welcome to the fire department. And it's been a ride ever since, 19 years later. So that's how I got started in a nutshell.
That's okay. That's awesome. That's awesome. So, you're originally from LA.
Well, so I was born there. So my story is a little unique. I was adopted when I was three. So yeah, I was born in Los Angeles. The family that adopted me, they continued to live in the Los Angeles area until I was five. And then they had family in a small town called Tennessee Ridge, Tennessee, which is in the Houston County area. And that's we ended up moving there to be closer to them, and obviously to get out of Los Angeles, because even in the 90s, LA was crazy, as a lot of people know. And so I was born in LA, but not raised in LA. That's why I never adopted the Southern accent, but that's probably why I talk so fast and have all these other mannerisms I never knew about. So.
All right. And so you're currently a captain in Rutherford County Fire Rescue in Tennessee. For those that don't know, including myself, can you explain the size of the department, calls, things of that nature?
Yeah. So Rutherford County is kind of unique. The department was mostly all volunteer until I believe it was 2014, and then the first paid station came online. Well, it was only run by four people. The fire chief that runs it now, he was like what they call the fire coordinator for the county. So he was managing all these small volunteer departments. And Rutherford County, as far as how big it is, if you exclude the cities of Murfreesboro, Smyrna, and Luverne, you're looking at about 520 square miles of territory that they covered. 2014 was a little different. Obviously, there was, a little less industry and a little less commercial business back then. But now these cities have blown up 10 years later, and the fire service had a larger demand to go paid. So over time, when I got hired in July 2021, there was only three paid stations. And again, that's only four fire companies. You're talking three engine companies and one rescue company. At the time, they adopted what they call the rescue engine concept. So those who have rescue engines and squads, it's basically the same exact thing. It's just, a Swiss Army knife of a fire apparatus. So currently now, thanks to COVID and how things went down with the state grant system and all that, we ended up opening more public safety buildings to put more firehouses online and more EMS units online. So now there's currently six fire stations and seven fire companies covering Rutherford County as a whole, outside of those cities. But given our territory, we still don't quite meet that, whatever you want to call it, NFPA 1710 response, whatever it is. We don't have all the firemen that we need on the fire ground. However, we're dumping most of our apparatus to meet that standard, and it's obviously become a challenge. So roughly six engine companies and one rescue company. We are currently in the process of building our first aerial apparatus. It will probably be online anywhere from spring of 2025 to late 2025, maybe 2026, depending on how things go. And we are also, well, actually, I got that backwards. I'm sorry. We're building a rescue company, our first big walk-in rescue that'll have a minimum of four on it. That will be here in 2025, 2026. And the aerial apparatus will be sometime later. I can't tell you exactly when, probably 2027 if I had to guess. But there's some big things coming to our department now that we weren't foreseeing years ago.
Okay. All right. So you said six stations, right?
Yes, sir. Six stations now with seven fire companies. One of those fire companies has a rescue and an engine company in it.
Okay. And I'm assuming with you saying 521 square miles, I'm assuming those fire stations are really not on top of each other. So what's the distance, if you're waiting on a company?
Well, and I'm still kind of learning the county myself, even, as long as I've been on, but it really depends. Like if you go to the northeast side and the Walter Hill community and the Las Casas community, those two companies aren't too far away from each other. But if either one of them are on a call, you're talking they could be on a fire scene a rescue incident for 20 minutes by themselves until more centralized companies coming from the Murfreesboro area are coming. Or if I'm coming from the south side in the Barfield community, it's going to take a while for us to get there. And it really just depends on the size and the complexity, as we all know. But, and then obviously, if it's a daytime or nighttime, are we taking the interstate or are we taking back roads? It all depends on all those elements coming together. And, there's been some days where all the companies are out on different calls, and then a major call comes in and we're a little closer to each other than if we were coming from quarters, or vice versa. We're coming from quarters, middle of the night, and it's the longest ETA as possible, but there's no traffic, so that we make up for that. So it's very complex. And then, we try to utilize mutual aid. If we have any of the city departments that are close by, we try to call them. We still have a couple of volunteer departments that we supplement that have been very clutch coming in and helping us whenever those calls come out, because we're still part of that system with them. So those companies help supplement, things if we can't meet those demands, obviously. especially when it comes to things like trucks and tankers, things that we cross staff.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. And so what's your minimum staffing across the board?
So we've recently implemented, we try to do a minimum staff of four on every apparatus, with the exception of the heavy rescue company, because it's still kind of in a transition phase of going from three to four on it. At one time when I was hired, it was two, and they were basically just guys bringing a toolbox. They weren't, you know, it was, that's basically what you were, just a manpower pool. But now the department has obviously expanded its services a little bit, and they want to take the rescue services a little more seriously than they did, and they want to try to put a minimum of four on it. But that's, we're trying to stay four, but you know, like everybody else, you know, if we have sick call outs, you know, things that happen, sometimes we drop, you know, some companies down to three, and that's kind of our bare minimum. You know, I'm gonna be completely honest. There's been times where the officers have had to drive the apparatus just because if we've had just some crazy things that have happened during the day and we're calling overtime and they have a while before they can get there, you know, some of us have had to pull double duty because we are a very young department. We have a lot of new guys here that don't have any experience yet. And so maintaining these staff levels has been challenging.
No, definitely. I'm sure. I'm sure. So my first official question for you will be, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
I love this question because it was part of my new hire question, coming into the department. So what's really cool about Rutherford County is, you know, they ask, you know, some very basic questions to recruits that are coming in that have no fire service experience. But then if you're coming in as a lateral, they ask questions kind of like that, saying, well, what's your definition of that? So I'll give you kind of a similar definition if I can recall exactly word for word. But what I basically told them is, you know, fire is, you know, according to Paul Hashsagen, fire is a, it is an unstoppable force of elemental nature, and all it knows is destruction. So aggressive is obviously the word that we could coin with that. If you look at our armed forces, you know, our armed forces have been fighting aggressive forces against us, you know, since the beginning. And we've never coined the word aggressive as a dirty word in the military or when we are, you know, defending our country. So here we are battling an unstoppable force of elemental nature. And the only way to completely stop it is to use quote unquote aggressive tactics that will stop it and put it out. To me, aggressive is just that. It's countering that unstoppable force of elemental nature. You know, why wouldn't we do that? Why wouldn't we be aggressive? You know, that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Right. No, I totally get it. I'm with you 100% on it. But I always like to ask the guests, you know, because everyone has like a different take on it. with that being said, with you starting out as a volunteer coming into the fire service, you mentioned about three names prior to in this interview that I'm assuming had a profound effect on you. So with that being said, when you came in not really knowing much, were those the individuals you wanted to emulate for yourself to become a better firefighter?
I mean, yeah, at the time, I mean, at 17 years old, I didn't know any different. You know, it was just the classic volunteer rule fire department. I mean, all you wanted to do was go to fires, and that's what was cool about our department is all we did was go to fires and extrications. We didn't go to any medical calls or alarms even, because where I lived at, nobody had alarm systems. If they did, we were like, okay, they'll call the cops. Cops go check it out, and then they'll call us if they need us. So yeah, I mean, in a sense, yeah. I mean, when I was looking up to my friend Scott, you know, he was a phenomenal guitar player and he was in church and, you know, was going for his pastor license. So of course I was trying to emulate that. Todd Davis, the guy who was working the recruit booth, you know, obviously this guy's full of knowledge. He had a big rescue background and, you know, he was promoted early as an officer. And I'm like, yeah, you know, that's the guy I want to be like as well. And all the other firemen that were there, I mean, again, it was just down dirty firemen, like just do the job. There was no standard, there was no training per se, other than just on the job training and then getting a lot of tips along the way. And our department, I would say, was probably like 20 years behind a lot of the other departments around us, so it makes sense. Like there's other people that had, you know, they had their stuff together, their certification classes together. We weren't there yet. And I'll get into kind of why that was a con later, but you know, that you're absolutely right. I did want to emulate those guys for sure.
Okay. All right. So you are currently a captain now, but I kind of want to go back a little bit in time. So once you joined the volunteer system and you saw how the fire department worked, I'm sure at some point somebody was like, "Hey man, you know you can do this full time. So with that, with that being said, the question I always like to ask is, when you got into your first career department, was it everything you thought it would be?
Yeah, it was. It absolutely was. And I'll tell you, getting to that point was very challenging. And I did some things that some people probably think a little crazy. You know, I actually had gotten offered a job and turned it down because, you know, as very close as I am with the Lord and the relationship I have with him, you know, I feel like that there's times that he speaks and there's things that just doesn't make sense, but you have to trust him. I got hired with a department that was about 30 minutes north where I was. And that was the department everybody wanted to be a part of in my area. They were just a bunch of aggressive, down dirty cowboys. They got a lot of fires, a lot of good calls. You know, they're not worried about you getting your certifications, you're getting a paycheck. Well, I tested for that department and in 2012, and I got an offer. And then I went home after my first day of orientation, and just something didn't feel right. I felt like I was going to throw up. And I was just like, what does this mean? So I called some local mentors of mine, Adam Steinbach, Jonathan Miller, these guys that were pastors in my area, and they were very close friends of mine. Long story short, they were like, if it was something that was for you, you wouldn't feel this bad about it. And I was like, okay. So I turned it down. I went to EMT school, and not knowing that going to EMT school right after that would be in the same area as where that department was. So I had to see these guys every day and look them in the eye and be like, man, I turned down a job here. I had to sit in class and hear Federal Q sirens go right by my classroom. And I'm like, man, I gotta listen to that. Well, when I got hired by the Franklin Fire Department in 2015, all of it kind of came together. It was in a way, it was kind of like going to church. My first day of orientation was the exact opposite. It was, hey, welcome to the fire service. And Greg Wild, I'll never forget, he was giving us our speech. He was a member of the local Fools chapter at the time, and I didn't know him. I had met him at FDIC at the Brotherhood Bash 1 year, just off of a whim, just shaking hands. And the some of the members of the Franklin Fire Department had come down and done a class for us. When they finally said, we're going to go beyond the basics in this academy, you know, it was like, okay, this is for me. Like, this is it. You know, I arrived. It's and the next 10 weeks were, you know, again, some of the greatest days of my life going into the fire academy. There was a lot of cool things we got to do and things I never thought I would ever actually get to see up close.
Okay. I love the fact that you bring up, you had an opportunity for what some would call, like, oh man, you turned down a dream job, but that going with your gut feeling, I think definitely plays a huge part into factoring different things. And I say that because, that'll be like somebody that turns down the FDNY. Or I'm just throwing that as an example, or a big metropolitan busy department. And people always kind of look at that individual like what's up with that? But I always like to look at it as it's not for them. It's not for them to know why. It's for you to know why you did. You know what I mean? Like,
That's right.
you know what I mean? Like, internally.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, man, you want to talk about doubt and fear and just like worried about what other people think. Like, I had so many people that I was like, man, these guys respect me, but now they probably think I'm a nut job. And rightfully so. I mean, I turned down the one thing that I pursued so long. I mean, from 17 years old up until that point, however many years that was. And even, you know, my dad, my mentor at the time, was just like, are you sure? And I'm like, he's like, you want to keep flipping pizzas, or I mean, what do you want to do? And I'm like, I just don't feel right about this, and I can't explain why. And you want to talk about how cool the Lord works, you know, later down the road. I was helping teach a class, and it's a little training event we put together in the Fort Campbell community in Clarksville area. It's called Light and Fight, and some of the members of that department were there taking the class. The department I turned down. I had a guy, and I was teaching the First Division Fire Pack and Search. We completed the evolution. He comes up to me, and he's a captain, I think, or a lieutenant, I'm sorry. And he goes, hey man, I just want to tell you something. He goes, I remember when you turned down the job here, and I remember thinking that you were a fool for doing that. He said, but I just want to tell you, you made the right call, because you would not be the man you are today talking about the things you're talking about if you had come to our department. And you want to talk about an emotional roller coaster for the next however many hours of the event. I was like, I can't believe what just happened. I had to go up to my wife and tell her. I said, do you realize how long it's been since I turned that job down? And look how many years it's taken to get like 100% closure on this. I mean, I knew I'd made the right choice, but when someone affirms but by coming up to you and saying something like that, and they had no clue what you were dealing with, and they didn't know your story, it's like, why would you say that? And then you find out, like, you know, maybe that was what I needed to hear at the time. And so I just wish he would have said it like however many years prior. You know, that was it was a really really amazing feeling to know that's how the Lord still looks out for you. He still, even in those little moments you don't think about, years later it can come back. So that's
No,
cool.
definitely, definitely. And you know, kudos to that individual too, because man, you know, the fire service, you meet so, you know, the fire service is like, I kind of equate the fire service to high school. Like you have your jocks, you have your popular kids, your cool kids, you have like the nerds, you have like the people that are looked at as weird. But to me, it truly takes like a special human being to like be very humble and open and go, hey man, like I remember you turned this down, like good for you. Because you know, a lot of people think certain departments, it's like the bee's knees. Oh man, if you don't say yes to this place, like you're crazy. Like this place is all in. Those places have problems too.
And I didn't know any of that. I'm gonna be completely honest, Danny. I had no clue what was going on in that department. Just something just didn't feel right after I left. I mean, I left there going, it's just I'm not even excited about this. Like, there's something wrong. I mean, this is my first career fire department that has given me an offer of employment, and something doesn't feel right about it. And it's nothing personal. It's just a something was wrong. And you know, it's crazy, you know, and I think there were some things, like, as I tell my story, I think there'll be some things that make sense later that, again, I wasn't thinking about, but so you're absolutely right though.
So you're in Franklin, you know, you're there or you've been there for several years. What made you transition out to another department? And I ask that because, you know, sometimes individuals, especially in today's fire service, we know people or have or I've heard of individuals that, you know, they kind of not jump, but like they leave one department to go to another, whether it's for more pay, better advancement, culture of the department or whatnot. So what made you take that leap again to leaving your comfort zone and going out to another department?
Well, and I want to start by saying this, you know, the department itself is not the problem anymore. At the time it was. I think they've done some things to fix some things since several more people after me left, because we all kind of said the same thing without talking to each other. First thing I'll say is, you know, I think COVID was a challenge for a lot of departments and how we responded to things. I noticed that the system of how we responded to calls changed overnight, and we didn't even know that we had that capability to pick and choose what calls we could go on based on our safety. And that was kind of interesting. You know, our fire chief actually published an article in Firehouse Magazine, more or less bragging that we were one of the first fire departments in the area to separate all of our dual company houses into satellite stations, anywhere from a public works building to a church to a school. And I thought that that was interesting at the time. I was like, okay, so we have the capability to open firehouses and community buildings overnight and pick and choose what calls to go on, but we can't prioritize day-to-day medical calls that put a lot of miles on our apparatus and wear and tear on our bodies and things that we honestly shouldn't be doing. We shouldn't be going to medical facilities, code three traffic, to assist nursing staff with picking a patient up off the floor or to assist with care. So there was something, so that's what I want to say first is, you know, there was a few things that were just interesting to me. And then I'll be honest, Danny, the culture and morale kind of changed after that for everybody. I think a lot of the guys that were there at the time felt the same thing I did, that there was something just didn't feel like the day that when we got hired, you know, whether it was the morale in the firehouse, whether it was the leadership, we couldn't pinpoint one necessary thing. But it wasn't what I originally signed up with. It wasn't the same feelings that I had. And I know sometimes those feelings fade, you go peaks and valleys, but it was nothing like this. I got to the point where I wasn't even allowed to train the way I wanted to, do things the way I wanted to because of fear. They had nothing other than, we're afraid you're going to get hurt. We're afraid you're going to do this. We're afraid. It's like the word afraid was coming up a lot. And, you know, there's some other things I can't share that were personal after that. But more or less, I just didn't feel like I was a fireman anymore. I felt like I was clocking in every day, just doing my job, and I was looking my wife in the eye. Well, at the time she was my fiance, and I looked at her and I was just like, I don't know why I'm doing this. Like, this doesn't make any sense. And then, fast forward, we got married, and I was like, honey, I'm gonna be honest with you. If we're gonna have kids one day, I want to look at them in the eye and tell them, regardless of how much money I make, regardless of where I'm at, what I'm doing, I want them to know that I love what I do, and I want to be the father that sets that standard in this household. If I'm gonna be a father, a man of this house, the rule is gonna be you find something you love to do, and you work as extremely hard at attaining that goal of being that person full time. And so for me being a fireman, I wanted to feel like a fireman again. And, I wasn't looking at Rutherford County. It was not on my radar at all. I was doing like everybody else. I was looking for bigger cities like Nashville. Memphis, honestly, was recruiting at the time, basically hiring almost anybody. You could do an online interview and you'd probably get the job if you had all the certifications and the experience they were looking for. And, that was tempting at one point. But then there was just something about Rutherford County that was a little different. I'd tested another department, had actually gotten an offer with them, and they weren't going to pay me what they said they would pay me. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But fast forward to Rutherford County, when I see the first steps of getting hired is you're being interviewed by firemen. It's like you're not being interviewed by HR, you're being interviewed by the firemen of the firehouses. And these are guys I respected. There were several of them that I knew, and I was like, these are some very highly respectable firemen, and they're going to interview me for a job. That's pretty cool. I took a dramatic pay cut to come there. I have no problem saying it. I was making in the mid 50s to upper 50s at Franklin Fire Department. I was going to go back to the bottom in the upper 30s, and it was worth it. It was worth every second, Danny. I'm telling you, I walked into that firehouse for the first time for my interview, and I could smell Dunkin' Donuts coffee on the coffee pot, and that was just a different smell. And it was like, okay, this is already a little different. But then you see the guys walking around, the APRAS floor smells like they've been to a fire. The guys had been working all day, and it's like, this is an awesome place. I mean, I don't know what it is, just something different already. And then you talk to some of the guys who already worked there that I knew, and it was like, you're going to go to a fires and you might be there by yourself for a while, and you might get, it's going to be basically a feast or famine for work. And I'm like, well, that's what I'm looking for. So the call volume was definitely an attraction to me, but I feel like they were going to put me in my to the test on how much I knew. It's like, okay, you've been in this, suburban setting for 7 years. Let's see how much you actually know coming here. And they put me through the ringer on my orientation. They put me through the ringer, my first year. Went to a lot of fires my first year, and I mean, it was put up or shut up, and I don't regret that at all. I mean, my wife was like, it's good to see you happy again and love going to work, and not dreading going to work anymore. So that was it for me, man.
Trust me, that says a lot, man. There's no worse feeling than all right, you get up that morning, you're like, fuck, I gotta go to work. I mean, I'm just gonna be honest, like that feeling sucks, man, especially doing what we do, and that sucks. So for you to have that, to be reinvigorated, to have that energy back, man, that definitely says a lot. And I know firemen out there that can relate to that 100%.
Yeah, and I want to say this too. The guys that I worked with, I love those guys so much. It wasn't them. If there was ever any doubt in some of them that they were the reason I left, it wasn't. If they're listening to this, it wasn't y'all, man. It was I didn't love the job anymore, and I didn't want to look at everybody in the eye and say, man, I hate what I'm doing. I hate what I'm doing right now. And ultimately, I mean, it's not even a pursuit of happiness. It's a pursuit of the calling, the fulfillment. I gotta look at the Lord in the eye one day and say, I did exactly what you wanted me to do versus, hey, no, I came to work making money to take care of my family, and that's all I get to look forward to. I mean, there's so much more to life than that. I'm not saying money buys happiness. I'm saying, in my opinion, the Lord provides, and I took a huge leap of faith taking that pay cut and not knowing, how many side gigs am I going to have to work to make up for that, but thankfully my debt income ratio wasn't like others. I didn't have kids at the time. So that move was a lot easier for me. But my house payment didn't cost near what it does now. The interest rates weren't what they are now. So I mean, for now, it's gonna be a lot harder to do something like that. But I felt like it was the right time. It was the right season in my life. And I'm telling you, Danny, I mean, I couldn't be more fulfilled in what I'm doing. It's been an incredible ride ever since. I'm so glad that I took that leap. And I miss those guys very much. I still talk to several of them, but I still walk in that community. I go to church in that community. The firehouse I worked at is right across the road from my church, and I still hear those guys go by, and I'm like, I made the right move. I get reminded every Sunday that I go into that town that I made the right move. So,
No,
but I still miss those guys.
definitely. And like I said, that's for you. So especially in this day and age in this society, man, so many people are quick to jump the gun and be like, well, why? I don't understand it. And it's like, it's not for you to understand. It's for that individual. Just like whenever we have, like I personally know firemen that leave my organization to go to different organizations, bigger ones. And some people are like, what are you doing? Oh, like you're a traitor. And it's like, no, leave the per if the person wants to go to a different place, let them go. Like, there's no, at least for me, there's no hard feelings. It's like, hey man, I wish you the best of luck to find whatever purpose that you feel like you need to have. So I totally get your sentiments.
Yeah, and there's guys even in our department that are leaving to find, what they're looking for. And, I would come out and say we don't make the most money. And recently some departments have gotten a large pay raise and the guys are leaving for that reason. And it's like, you know what? That's okay. If you're on it looking me in the eye and saying, I want to take care of my family and I can't do it on the salary here, fine. That gives us more ammunition to fire our battle later down the road to get our salaries up. But at the same time, I caution people on leaving just for money. It's like, I'm telling you, there's several of us that include myself that came to Rutherford County, and I'm not even talking about the Tyler Benefields, or others that are out there that have taken dramatic pay cuts. The Shane Richardsons, the guys that I work with that are officers now, they didn't want to promote either, but they wanted to preserve this culture that we have, and that's what makes Rutherford County so special is the culture. It's not the pay by any means. And then, there's guys that they want to leave and pursue other places, and I'm like, that's fine, go. But I hope you have what you had here, the family atmosphere, the culture, the aggressiveness that is, our second nature going to fires, the best training that we can possibly offer you. Like, I hope that's what you're going to get wherever you go. And that's the one thing I ask them to promise me when they go. If they don't get that, I'm like, man, I best of luck,
Right. Oh, definitely. Okay. With that being said, man, you said you joined Rutherford in 2021, correct?
Sir, July 2021.
July of 2021. So at what point, or as I like to say, inside of you internally, what tripped your breaker to go, hey, I'm gonna test for captain?
Oh boy. So I will say this. There was no desire in the time that I'd been there. I'd been there, I think, about a year and a half, and I had no desire to promote at all. Well, I'm a firm believer that in anything we do in the fire service, if you're going to be an instructor, if you're going to take some sort of leadership, any kind of response, even in the firehouse, if you're giving a responsibility, it's an invitation to the table. You don't invite yourself. You don't put your hand up saying, I want to do this. I mean, there's a level of volunteering that has to happen with certain things we do. But when it comes to promotion, especially in a department like ours that's still new and growing, I did not want to be that guy to just say I'm applying for captain. That was not on my radar. And the guys I got hired with them on the list, we felt the same way. The reason that I ultimately did it is because when I had the Cameron Jacobs, the Jacob Hills, the Chad Alexanders, the guys that were calling me, the Matt Henrys, the guys who called me on my days off and said, listen, man, our department is small and it's growing fast. And we want to put good people in these positions. And remember, these are all guys that either have been promoted, were in a promotion over me, or they were just senior members of the department. They'd been there since the very beginning. When they're calling me and saying, hey man, we would like for you to do this, that meant something. That was one of those, okay, I need to take that seriously. But at the same time, I made a point to look, I don't have an interest in this. I just want to be a backstepper. I want to be a solid fireman. And they said, listen, you've already proven that. So why don't you do us a favor and try to create more of those and preserve what we have here? And that took a lot of praying and a lot of time to actually flip that breaker like you're talking about. It wasn't an easy decision. And the first time I did it, the first time that we tested, they were only going to promote one. And so that was kind of like my way of getting the practice out of the way. It's like, look, I'm not expecting to come into this and get promoted, but I'm going to go through the process to see what it's like. And I'm glad I did because I didn't do very well at all, but I was way more prepared for the next go around. And when we did the next round, I was number one on the list out of like 9 or 10, I think, that had tested. And so, I had some time to prepare, and then I was time to take it more seriously. And then the whole time, I'm like, I hope that the guys underneath me are the same ones that the other guys were going after, saying, hey, we want these guys to promote too. And thankfully, it was. So we all promoted together, and here we are. You know, this, I think, I took my assignment. I'm trying to remember. I think it was January of 23. I think is when I took the assignment. Might have been right before that. It might have been like in December of 2022. So it was really cool to finally get the call saying, hey, you know, you did it, and this is where you're going. And thankfully, it was in the same firehouse I had been assigned to in the same area, just on a different shift. So that was kind of cool.
Gotcha. Okay. I mean, I love the humility. The fact that you've mentioned, you know, you took it the first time and you bombed it. I mean, but that's the thing. Like, you learn from that. Some people might see that in like a negative connotation, but it's for me. But to me, it's like if you take it and you bomb it and you're humble about it, it's like, all right, cool. Yeah, I did terribly, but I saw what I need to perfect on to get better. And the next go around, like you said, top of the list right there. It just shows what hard work and dedication gives.
And I want to give credit to my wife. My wife was a rock star, you know, wanting to sit down with me all those nights and run me through like the problem employee scenario. She tried to do a good job being a problem employee, and that was kind of interesting because I was like, "You're not going to use this against me later, are you?" Like, like I get to write you up for once. But anyway, no, it was a good time, man. And the guys that, you know, promoted under me, you know, they were very well prepared too. It was nice to that we all kind of shared the same story, you know, of how we prepared for it, and you know, and encourage each other along the way, but still saying, hey, I'm still gonna try to beat you, you know, like just you know that
Right.
fun little competition, if you want to call it. So.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely. Okay. With that, I want to go to the next topic of leadership. Since you are a company officer, what does leadership mean to you? And I ask that because 2024, man, you know it as well as I do. We got a lot of individuals, a good number of individuals that want to promote for the wrong damn reasons. And it's like you said,
Absolutely.
pay. And I understand. With pricing of everything in this day and age, I get it. But when you ask an individual, hey man, why'd you get promoted? And the first thing out their mouth is pay, you're not in it for the right reason. So
No, I could, yeah.
what's leadership to you?
Man, I'll tell you what. If somebody could go back and kind of explain to me that leadership on day one is everything is your problem. And you have to have the answer to it. I probably would have taken my time a little bit more in becoming a leader. But what I will say is, you know, being a company officer, I mean, we could go down a rabbit hole for hours on all the leadership aspects. But you know, in a nutshell, like you know, the my testimony growing up, you know, I feel like that God was preparing me to be a leader because I was a little bit more mature for my age. You know, my parents passed away at a very young age. I didn't have a whole lot of that, so I had to learn about life a little differently. And I still don't have it all together by any means. I still struggle like learning about financial stuff and you know how the markets work and this and that. But when you've got young people that come up to you and they ask you those questions and they expect you to have the answer, there's something about your demeanor that says you have the answers. That's leadership. You know, you're the person they're turning to. I had a pastor ask me Sunday about drumming advice. He said, "Hey, I want to talk to another drummer about how to ask this question." I'm like, "Well, why'd you ask me that? You're a pastor." And he goes, "Well, you're a drummer. I want to ask, you know, so that I'm like, "Well, there's that humility aspect you're talking about. Like, you're willing to ask anybody anything as a leader, you know? So there's a humility aspect, there's a humbleness aspect to it. I mean, gosh, Dan, we could go on for hours about all the things that what a leader is, but I mean, you have to have those answers, and you have to be willing to also admit when you don't have them, and don't BS people and say, "Man, I don't know. I really don't know." But you know what? That's a great question. Let's figure that out together. You know, like if it's physically opening a textbook together and we look through the page together and read it together, like what a leader should do. The best leaders that I'll never have worked for, but I have studied under and have been mentored by, they were those people. You know, they didn't just tell war stories and say, "Do as I say, not as I do." They said, "I wish you would have done it this way because this is where I made my mistakes." We have to be open about sharing our mistakes as leaders. And I have no problem ever telling anybody what mistakes I've made so that they don't make them. But yeah, I mean, I don't think I need to beat a dead horse, Danny. I think that does that answer pretty well, like, you know, what a leader is. I mean, I probably cannot put an account on how many better answers there are out there, but I mean, everything is your fault as a leader. You have to have an answer for it. And if you don't take responsibility for something like that, it will be your problem regardless. I mean, that's the other thing. Like you're going to take ownership of things that will become your problem if you don't do anything about it. You know, we don't, as kids, you know, you were told not to walk past trash can with trash on the floor and not throw it in the trash can. I mean, that's early leadership and discipline right there. You know, I mean, we could go on for hours about discipline, like disciplining yourself in all aspects, you know, of your health, you know, I mean, your faith, your fitness. I mean, you name it. I mean, we have to have discipline as leaders. Leaders are disciplined. It's not, we don't turn on a podcast and become motivated overnight to be disciplined again. It's no, this is second nature. A leader's supposed to be disciplined. Golly, I mean, that's such a, I feel like I can't answer it. It's, there's so many more,
No,
you know, there's
no.
not enough weed, you know?
No, I get you. I get you. But you hit a lot of topics on the head, man. That definitely for sure. You know, you use the word discipline instead of motivation. You know, a lot of people misconstrue the two because yeah, motivation is great, but it only gets you so far. Once your gas tank is empty, it's like the motivation is gone with it. It's all about that discipline to keep going, the discipline of wanting to learn. Whether that's like, you know, training, physical fitness, being the best version of yourself, and knowing the biggest thing for me is knowing like if you were my company officer and I come to you with a question and you're just like, I don't know, but I'll find out for you. You know, don't BS the individual. It's okay if you don't. The fire service is so vast, man. And you know, there's so many different things to me that we can't be good at everything. But it's awesome if you hear somebody go, hey, I don't know, but I'll find out for you and then I'll get back to you.
For sure. You know, and the best leaders I work for, like I said, they don't sit there and just make up an answer, mumble to you, and it's like, man, I don't know that, you know, or they try to change the topic. You know, they tackle it head on. And I mean, you know, I think there's a level of transparency that leaders should have. It's, you know, we kind of confuse that with an open door policy. Like chiefs will say they have an open door policy. Well, that's not always the case because there's certain things I'm going to come in about and you're like, nah, dude, you got to shut the door on that one. We can't talk about that here. Okay. So you don't have an open door policy, but there should be a transparency level about you as the individual. It's like, okay, listen, man, I struggle with this. You know, I wish I did this better, you know, so I don't have the answer to that, but I will point you in the direction of somebody who has the answer. And if you don't mind, like, can you educate me on that too? You know, it's like that's the people I want to, you know, continue to be like and emulate. And you know, I never want to be looked at as a leader. I want to be someone who's, you know, I'm on the front with them. There's that, I think that people, when I think of leadership, there's that picture that you see. There's a difference between a leader and a dictator, I think, if I remember right. It's like that, whatever it is, that Egyptian whatever it is, and it looks like a guy standing at the front, you know, pulling, you know, the wagon with his horses, being on the wagon throwing the whip, you know, and whipping people. I probably just totally botched that illustration, but to me that's what leadership is. You know, it's when we're on a fire, if my guys are pulling ceiling and I'm just holding a flashlight saying pull here, pull here, yeah, they need that direction, but they need an officer also that's going to help them get the job done. You know, and in our system, officers can't afford to stand off to the side. You know, in the way that we work and operate, officers have to be involved in the operation. I mean, now granted, that is the hardest part about being an officer, is being hands off. You probably know this better than anybody. Being hands off is the hardest part, but there's still an aspect that where we have to jump in. You know, if we see an issue, it's not taking the responsibility away. It's, hey, listen, let me remind you again how this is supposed to look. And if I can demonstrate that with the way that I, you know, do the job, and then it meets the goal, then okay, we did it. You know, that's what a leader does. That's cool about being at the academy. You know, when you teach at the academy level, it's, you don't just teach the checkbox. You say, this is, as an officer in this academy with you, this is what it looks like for a fireman. Like, you have to be able to demonstrate all those basic skill sets. And we could go down another rabbit hole of, you know, what the academy expectations should look like. But in my opinion, leaders that teach are the ones that can do. They are doing it. They are not the ones that stand off to the side and say, hey, watch Danny over here throw this 35-foot ladder by himself. No, it's, I'm going to do it too. You know, and if I can't do it, I tell you that in front and say, listen, I was told to lead this class, but here's the guy over here that's going to do it. You know, so that's
No, gotcha. 100%, 100%. With that being said, what's your take on outside training?
man, it's a must. I don't know if this is a good spot to kind of jump into my testimony a little bit, but outside training kind of saved my life.
Sure. Yeah,
I don't know.
go
I don't
ahead.
know. Maybe we can,
Nope. Go
but
ahead.
well,
Go ahead.
okay, so starting fire service 2005 and then up till 2013, there was no outside training aside from, hey, the State Fire Academy is putting on a class at this county's department for this class, this certification, this certificate. Go get it. Okay, cool. We're going to go to that. That was what we called outside training. And that's not outside training that I'm referring to. The outside training I'm referring to is you find firemen that have been doing the job to a fireman standard that know what firemanship is. And that's who you need to be taking classes from. The certifications and certificates are great, but they do not help you unless you absolutely have mastered the material and the knowledge from firemen. That's where the baseline should be. So in my opinion, if you're in a rural volunteer fire department and you, that's all it is, it's a volunteer fire department, you are only looking forward to your weekly, monthly trainings, whatever it is they do. Okay. If those topics aren't reflected the way I just talked about by other firemen that come in your department, or if you invite a guest there, you're in trouble. And here's why, because people only know what they know. You know, the box for rural volunteers, unfortunately, is this big, and it's not their fault. It was like that for me for 7 years. It's not their fault. But when you are, it's kind of like the Bible. When somebody finally tells you, hey, this is how you read it, and this is how you should apply it, it's accountability now. It's okay. Now it's your responsibility to go get it. Well, long story short, if outside firemen hadn't taught me the job I know now, you know, there's no telling where I would have been. So in my opinion, you need to at least have in your budget, you know, for every volunteer fire department should have a budget, a training allotment, a travel allotment, a vehicle that people can take to go to any class in the country. A cost of a plane ticket is pretty expensive, and, you know, freight for your gear is expensive. I get it. But the return that those firemen are going to bring back to your department is priceless. There's no price on that. So in my opinion, outside training, it needs to be applied when your department can't meet those things we just talked about. You know,
right.
if you can't do, like, for instance, okay, you're going to go to a firefighter survival class in Virginia because they have this awesome training tower, they have all these props and all that, and you are a department that is one state over and you have no access to any of that stuff, and your officers aren't going to do that. Okay, we need to go to an outside class and do that. Okay, we're going to do a hose advancement class in our department. All right, cool. Well, what are we going to do? Well, we're just going to talk about hose and nozzles. We're not going to actually flow water because any monkey can do that. That's the way it was told to me. Mm-hmm. Any monkey can pull hose and pull water. Okay. Well, then you're going to go to an incident one day and figure out there was a better way to do that. And then mm-hmm. you're going to talk to some fire and show you that. So does that make, does it, am I tracking good?
Yep.
Like that,
yep.
That's why outside training comes in. It's okay. You can't do this in your department either because there's no will to do it or there's no way to do it. You have to go outside. Forcible entry. If you don't have a door prop or a way to practice, and I mean, I'm talking a high quality door prop with real flexibility, real resistance, real doors. Okay. Yeah. I grew up on the Sean Wilson PowerPoint of wrap your Halligan and put a bungee cord on the door, and, you know, and it worked. It worked for the system. And I forced some good doors on the fire ground, but I still didn't know it.
Right.
You know, I still wish I had gone to an outside forcible entry class and got some real reps on some real doors, real props with real tools. So that's one example. So my life changed in 2013 after a call I went on, and I'm not going to tell the whole story, but the end result was that I pulled up as the first new company officer. I said, everybody's out. We had heavy fire showing on a 2-story single family coming out the front. I said, everybody was out, and we ended up having two trapped upstairs, the second floor window, because my brain said, if I see mom, dad, and two kids on the front porch, which is what I saw, that everybody's out. There's nobody else in there. I can say on the radio, everybody's out and everybody's going to be fine. No, wasn't even close. I had never taken a class on throwing ladders by myself, and I didn't throw the ladder that night, but the guy I was with had to throw a 24 by himself. Nobody taught him how to do it. He just did it. Didn't know how to carry down a 350-pound victim, you know, by yourself with one ladder. Had to learn how to do it on the fly. Didn't know why flow is so important to know on hose advancement. It's like, why are smooth bores so great? Why is this adjustable gallonage fog nozzle that's set to 30 gallons per minute on 100 PSI fog nozzle with mixed 1¾-inch cotton jacketed hose and God knows what's in it? Why is this not working the way it has for the last however many years, you know? And come to find out, we're taking this into a flow path at the top of a chimney, and when we could just went through the interior to go grab them. So long, long story short, Danny, I mean, 2013 was a big year. And if I had taken outside classes outside of firefighter survival, the situation that night would have been much different, way different.
And
So that's I hope and pray that nobody else has an incident like that. That's why outside training is important.
I ask if those individuals that were you guys able to get them out?
Yeah, so we were lucky with the first one. She was her head and arms were sticking out the window. We were able to get her down. She suffered third degree burns over most of the lower half of her body. But the other individual we left behind because we didn't know where he was. She barely was able to tell us that he was in there at all. And then during the secondary searches of that floor, we were able to locate him on a bed, and the investigators brought him down in a body bag, and they wouldn't let us go near him at the time. But we asked the question, so, well, where was he? Well, the window that we pulled her out of, that we were at the time trying to VES with a hose line, he was only 6 feet away to our left. If we had gotten in that window, gotten him on the floor, pushed him out the window, we would have felt a little bit better knowing that we gave every bit we had, but we didn't. It was a that was a tough one for me and
No,
for the guys that were
that's
there.
no, for real. It's surreal. It's surreal. And it goes back to the fact that one, this job isn't a game. We have individuals who see, oh, I get to work 9 shifts a month. I get to do my side hustle and all this other stuff. But it's like those calls for those individuals, they expect that call never to come out. It's like, I don't need to do that. We won't have to worry about doing this, or I have help. Like, it's that complacency mindset. It's that notion of you don't know what you don't know. Because like you, I've been in the fire service, fuck, I don't even know how long now, but like I've been on my career department for 17 years, but
Wow.
the past 4 years I have been looking at things that I didn't know because I was stuck in that box, in that bubble of, oh, I did my quarterly training like we're supposed to do. We would train every once in a while, whatever skill we wanted to perfect. But it wasn't until going outside, and anytime I tell this, I always have to give credit. My wife's the one that pushed me because, I never knew about podcasts. I never knew about fire conferences. I'm like, what the hell is a fire conference? And then
Yep.
I started doing some research, and I'm like, oh shit, like, okay, like they have guest speakers. Like, oh, I've never heard of this individual. And then you, at least for me, listening to the podcast, I kept hearing the same names. Like Kyle Romagus was one. I'm like, who the hell is this guy with a deep ass voice from Texas? I'm like, fuck, like, okay, Kyle Romagus. All right. And then you just keep hearing names and all these different conferences. And I'm like, so I started looking up conferences, and then I found one in my backyard, and my wife's like, you should go. And I'm like, but you have to pay for it. She's like, well, just fucking pay for it. It's for your job. Just go. So I went, man. And dude, I'm telling you, and I tell everybody that the moment I walked in there, I was like, this is what firemanship is. I'm listening
That's
to
right.
chiefs, captains, firemen give lectures and speeches that are like motivating you. Like, if we have to go to war, it was like, yo, I'm ready. Give me whatever I gotta go. Let's go kill some shit. Like,
That's right.
it's that powerful. So, man, forever changed my aspect of, okay, I don't know shit. Or actually, I'll take that back. I know things to the best of my ability through my department, but there are other ways, better ways to do things. So that's why I tell
Exactly.
people, whoever I meet, man, like, go to outside conferences. You will learn shit. You will see tips, tricks, shit you didn't even know, that you didn't even think about. Like, so I love that you mentioned that. And unfortunately, I hate the fact that you have to go through that. But in this day and age, man, there are some people who need to experience that because
Oh, 100%.
that's, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying that like in a bad way, but we have so many people who think this job is bread and butter. Like, you hear a hell of a call from a neighboring department, and they're like, that won't happen here. Like, I don't need to worry about that.
Oh yeah.
Or, why are you training like this? That's stupid. Why are you wearing your gear? It's hot outside. Like, you should save it for when we get that next run. And it's like, that's all bullshit.
Man, we're one call away from our life completely changing. That's it in a nutshell, dude. I mean, you said it, one call away from our life and our department changing. And I'll be honest, Danny, that March 5th, 2013, that one call changed everything we did as, you know, as the fire department, that with that department I was with. I mean, that was the absolute just rock bottom. 'Cause I mean, I'd been to a lot of fires where people died. I mean, slab jobs, you know, people, they're okay, they're dead. We can do about it. You pull up, it's blown out of every window, every orifice. Okay, they're dead. You know, it's survivability profiling. Yeah, we know what survivability profiling. Yeah, they're dead. 100% they're dead. And then there's that one time you make these assumptions, that autonomy of your brain, that lizard brain that Aaron Fields talks about. Okay, this is how you're programmed and this is all you know. Yep, everybody's out, guys. I said it on the radio. Everyone is out. And
Slow
there's two out there.
comer. Yep. Yep.
And now it's holy shoot, dude. Now we gotta go. I my workflow has now changed. You know, a two-man engine for me and my buddy Chris that night was normally, hey, if I'm driving, I got command, I got the pump panel, you got the line. I'll be there in a minute. When somebody shows up to relieve me, I'm right there with you, brother. That night, all hell broke loose in a nutshell. I mean, no pun intended. I mean, it was, you know, every time I tell the story, you know, it sounds very calm and collected, like there was a flow to it. I can't describe it. It was, imagine just the worst feeling you could have of knowing you screwed up with the first words out of your mouth. You didn't even know you screwed up. And then you were going to go through a series of events that were going to say you screwed up. And then at the end of it, what does everybody say? Ah, brother, you did the best you could. Pat on the back. You did the best you could,
Right.
man. You know, right.
Right.
I did the best I could with what I knew. However, like you said earlier, there was a way better way of doing things that firemen had been doing it for generations since the 1800s. And I didn't know any of that. What good was my little book of certificates and all that crap that was put into my head when I couldn't apply it to the one person that's up there waiting on me? And then it ended up being two. It's like, you know, yeah, I would have gotten really seriously hurt if I tried to do some of the things that, you know, I know how to do now and didn't have reps in it. Didn't have, if I had just the knowledge and didn't have the reps to back it up, I would have gotten seriously hurt. And so would my buddy. But at the end of the day, my attitude towards outside training was different. I mean, we used to make fun of the departments around us that had radio straps and wore their SCBAs. We made fun of them. Like, we're like, oh, you got your fire one and two? I bet you got a radio strap. I bet you got your little Scott pack and all that. Like, we made fun of them. It was a thing. And you know, when I first got started in that volunteer department for several years, we made fun of those departments that were around us that did it. But I bet that you know, looking back now, it's like those guys probably had their act together on their basics, you know,
Right.
not completely, but what we had at the time. And
Right.
you know, so and then here I was years later, as at that time as a captain for this volunteer fire department, and I couldn't lead. I couldn't get the job done. So that's a whole another part of the story. Started with the saying, yeah, I was a captain in this department and I didn't lead.
You know, dude, like to me, the best thing you said, we're all one call away from everything changing, everything. And I don't wish for that, but I just can't understand the concept of individuals not understanding that. You know, they go into work and it's like, all right, you know, the mundane, it's like Groundhog's Day for them. All right, come in, I'm gonna barely check the truck, or all right, you know, or whatever they're standing in. All right, I'm gonna check the truck. Hey, what's for lunch? Are you gonna PT? No, I'm good. I don't need to PT, man. I work hard enough on my side gig. I don't need to PT. I love hearing that answer too. Like, yeah, you know, I work outside, so I'm conditioned. Like, okay. And then you just go through those motions. And then next thing you know, that's when complacency sets. And then when those tones go off and they say structure fire, reported entrapment, multiple calls, blah, 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 blah. Now it's like, oh shit, like this is real. And it's like, this job's been real. This job's always been real once you, the first day you showed up. So I love the fact that you shared your story, man. I mean, I hate that you had to go through that, but it's a learning experience. It's a learning curve.
Yeah, and I'll say this too, Dan. I mean, I think that kind of the wrap up that part of that topic there is you know, everybody's one call away from everything changing, and the ones that have that attitude you were just talking about, they have all these excuses. They haven't had that moment, and they're gonna hit it hard. They're gonna hit that moment super hard when they finally do go to that call. And here's what really bothers me, Danny, is that there's gonna be guys who've had that already, and they still haven't learned from it. And that's the people we got to stay away from. Like,
True.
you know, the guys that me and you lead, like, we cannot let them be around people like that when we know they have hit rock bottom, because it would have been our rock bottom if we were in their position. But then they're sitting there as company officers, engineers, senior firemen, the guys who've been doing this for 30 years and got nothing to show for it. We've all know who those people are. They've had those moments and they haven't learned a freaking thing. And all we can do now is kind of go into protective mode with all these younger guys and inexperienced people, say, look, stay away from that person over there, because they're going to get you in trouble.
Definitely, definitely, definitely. Okay. With that being said, in your opinion only, what can the fire service improve on, or what do you think we're doing okay on when it comes to recruitment or retention?
I gotta think about that one. I mean, what we're doing really well now, I mean, maybe not okay, maybe I'm going a little bit over the question a little bit, but one thing we're doing better now is getting the information out. Social media, even though it can be a weapon to really, really hurt other people, it has been one of our greatest advocates as the fire service. Because when me and you started, it was okay, we had to read magazines. We hoped that somebody would get the subscription for the firehouse, and if they didn't, you paid for it out of your pocket. If somebody wrote down the website Fire Nuggets and you were smart enough to write it down and go look it up, you could look up some stuff. Fire engineering training minutes was a thing back then. Not YouTube, not TikTok. It was no, you had to look up on the website and hope that the little video player worked. And again, we know that there's been way other ways, but the information getting out now is what we're doing better at. I think that there are still some things that we could do a little bit better in terms of recruitment and retention. I think that one of the things that my department invested in was, they invested in a good video production company to recruit our department. And, there's still, our department's a little different than it was when that video was shot. So there's some things we need to update. But one thing we did really good about was getting the message out about the family aspect, the culture, the fact that, we put the citizens first. That's some things that other departments need to probably do better. And I think what some people are afraid to do, though, is they're afraid to say that. They're afraid to say, we put the citizens first, because it goes against the administration's viewpoint on the fire service. If the administration doesn't agree with it, they're not going to let you recruit and retain firemen. They're going to say, no, we need some good employees, model employees that are going to dress up, their shirt tucked in, their boots polished. And there's a place, a time and place for all that. That's all well and good, but it comes down to doing the job. If you can, one, if you have a department that you can do the job at, that is a fireman's fire department, you need to get out there and recruit and retain other firemen that will, share that passion and, help preserve that. That's what we got to do better, is we got to find those people. And I know only certain communities are only so big. Nobody wants to volunteer anymore, so nobody's going to recruit and retain volunteers. It's a lot harder to do now, because there's departments around me, even the department I'm with now that I volunteer with, we have standards now for people to meet. And it's a lot of it's physical fitness. It's, hey, you have to be able to show me you can maintain some sort of level of physical fitness in full bunker gear while breathing air. And if you can't do that, you're not going to last on a structure fire, and we're going to be the ones out there taking care of you. And that's something else we have to really, I guess, try to do a little bit better of, is try to remember we're not out to get numbers for firefighters. We're looking for quality individuals. I try to go after specifically like high schoolers that played sports, and then college people that play sports, because they already have some sort of discipline regimen to go to the gym and to, have some sort of, good eating habits and things like that, hydration. And then they come to the fire academy, even whether it's a modified fire academy you do on weekends and nights, or if you do it through, Monday through Friday, whatever it is, those individuals last and do a whole lot better in the fire academy than the ones you just pull off the street that were working a factory and have bad habits and all this. And they're like, yeah, I want to be a fireman. Well, do you really? I mean, do you really realize what you signed up for? So we got to do a better job of getting the message out of what this job really is. It's not glamour. And I don't want to say all those cliche phrases. It's not about the t-shirt. Well, the t-shirt should be something that is earned. We have to stop handing it out on the first day. This is part of your daily uniform. No, when I joined the fire service, I had to buy my own t-shirts. They didn't give me. I remember looking forward to the day that it said Erin Fire Department on that chest. It was like, man, I earned it. Like, that's cool. Class B uniforms with the little badge and the button ups, we had to buy those out of our pocket, and now we hand those out. Well, there needs to be a time in the fire service where people earn it. And if I was the person in position to do that, it'd be my responsibility to say, look, that crest on your chest, you don't earn, you don't get when you walk in the door. You earn it.
You earn it, right?
Your grit, your determination, your attitude. So like the guys assigned to my firehouse, as a gift, I gave them the t-shirts with our logo on it. You know, that was a gift because they earned it. And then the guys that came in after, you know, when they get signed to the firehouse, I'm like, look, you're gonna earn this t-shirt. You're not gonna go around wearing it, you know. So I mean, we have to do a better job of telling people to earn things and not just hand it to them.
No, that's a fact. That's a fact, man. I know everything you're saying was, yeah, because I remember back when I was a volley, you know, we had somebody come on. They, you know, they I don't know if we even did like probation. No, we did do probationary periods, but like they were given things. Here's your uniform. Oh, they have a surplus of clothes upstairs. Let's fit you on for a class B. And it's like, I get it. You know, we want to include, entice people like, hey, come on, but there are things that you have to earn. And I truly believe that when you make an individual earn it means something a little bit more to that individual instead of just giving it out to them.
Absolutely. I can tell you about a guy, and I don't think he'd mind me sharing a story, but you know, he got hurt in the fire academy last year. And you know, we told him, said, look, man, you got two choices. You can either resign and come back next year, or you're gonna go on, you know, modified light duty, and you're gonna have to sit and watch all these guys finish the academy. You're gonna have to sit until you're cleared for duty, and then we're gonna have to figure out a way to get you back in the fire academy and get you back in here. And he was like, Cap, I want to earn it. I don't want to quit. He said, like, that might not be the answer you're looking for, but I want to earn it. And I was like, this guy's crazy. He's going to sit here and watch his entire class, the rest of this academy, finish. He's going to sit every day, and then he wants to come back. Well, Brian Cummings, if you're listening, you're an inspiration to me because, yeah, some departments would have just let him go. But we said, look, technically, we can't let him go. He didn't do anything wrong. We just have to figure out another means for him to pass this, you know, not pass the fire academy, but to get to his probationary period. Well, long story short, he didn't get to walk the line. He got to watch his classmates walk across the line, get their diploma. They got to, you know, administer the oath. And then he gave me the next 3 months of the most hard work, down dirty grit of earning that diploma. And we did a surprise graduation for him in the firehouse when he finally completed all everything we asked him to do, because that kid wanted it. He didn't want to wear the t-shirt. He didn't want to put on a leather helmet. He wasn't doing what other probationary members were doing, where they were just like just jumping right into doing the job and doing all that stuff. Like, he was like, look, I want to earn this. I haven't earned my right yet. And I'm like, dude, that meant something to me. Like, you know, as a captain, it's like, that's who we want in the firehouse, is that guy. And that's something you can't teach in the fire academy. You can't re recruit off the street that kind of person. You have to find them, and you have to see it in the fire academy, in the firehouse. I mean, I don't know what the answer is on how to find these people, but that's the people we need to keep looking for. Is we need to find people with a story, somebody that is, no, I want to earn this. And I don't think I need to go into a rabbit hole about entitlement, but we got too many dang people that have been raised in a home of entitlement, and they don't even know how to tie their shoes, much less they're going to come in and put this uniform on and say, I want to be a selfless public servant. It's like, I don't know what the right answer is, other than we got to figure out who those people are, and we got to find them. I mean, I'll tell you, the best recruitments that I've seen is when they come into the firehouse and they talk to you long before they apply for the job. And those are the guys you're going after. You know, we've had several of those in my department that even now we've got a couple. They're like, you know, they're 17, 18 years old, and their uncles and dads are bringing them into the firehouse saying, hey, this guy wants a real job. And it's like, all right, well, tell me about yourself, you know, and then you learn what kind of person they are, what kind of character they have. And then it's like, okay, how do I sell you on wanting to come to this fire department and not applying with somebody else? You know, it's like, you know, does that make sense? Like,
No,
I
you're
don't know
good.
the answer,
No,
but
no, no, no.
I gotta find people with good character, and I gotta figure out, you know, does that person know more people like that that we can go after that's willing to come into the fire service, you know?
Right. No, you're right. You're right. And I think, you know, if you have a organization that has that kind of culture, that kind of mentality, where we don't want numbers, we want quality individuals. And you know,
Absolutely.
we're not looking for checkbox employees. We're looking for employees that actually care about the job. But I truly believe that all starts with your top command staff. Like that needs to be the chief's position on how he looks at how he or she wants their department to be ran. So we'll leave that there. I'm going to switch to the last topic here. Wellness and truly being there for one another. I know, like, to me, it takes a very strong individual to admit like their faults, their highs, their lows, especially their faith, especially in this day and time, man. You know, like I said, the world is it's completely changed from what I remember. And you know, I have a 5-year-old, and it's like thinking about how I'm gonna raise her, what I'm gonna tell her. Like, there are things where I'm sure if other parents find out, like I'm never gonna lie to my daughter. I'm gonna teach her and tell her like shit that she just needs to hear. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it. I'm gonna let her know the world's not a happy-go-lucky place. There are people who won't like you for your hair, your skin color, your fucking sexual orientation. Like, the world is, it's a, to be blunt, it's a fucked up place. And you know, I always tell her, hey, treat yourself with respect and treat others how you'd want to be treated. With that being said, man, I look at individuals like you. God, I hate whenever I draw blanks on these names. You, Cody Tresh Trail, fuck, the damn thermal imaging guy, Andy Starnes, because you guys are very vocal about like humility and your faith and how your faith carried you and your trials and like your tribulations, man. So when it comes to firemen being there for one another, like, what's your take on that?
Man, I can't say it enough. I mean, it's a family for a reason. I mean, you don't call it a family because it sounds cool in your recruitment and retention poster. It literally is a family. Like the guys that I serve with right now, I mean, we have our group text, we goof off, you know, we do things together on our days off. I mean, I grew up in the fire service of, you know, even in the as volunteers, we went to each other's houses, had bonfires, parties, hung out, you know, the spouses were involved with each other. They all hung out, you know, the kids all hung out together. Like that's what it is. It's a no-brainer just to be family. One of the things that, you know, I started seeing with some of these departments is there's less and less of that. The department I left, you know, I'm just going to come out and say it, you know, the we my wedding was right across the road at that church, and it was on my shift, and the guys didn't show up. And some of them wanted to be there. They couldn't be there. Some of them were on calls. But it was, hey, I didn't invite. It was during COVID, and our church didn't have any guidelines on people coming in. But they were like, look, invite who you want to. And I said, I just want to invite the guys from the firehouse. I got my brother, who's one of my groomsmen. I got my basically like my dad, Paul, who's my best man. And that's it. The firehouse. That's who I want there. They didn't show up. That was when things took a turn. You know, it's like, you know, when you lose that for whatever reason, whether it was good, bad, or indifferent, when it's not there, that's a time to reassess what you're a part of. Are you part of a family? Or are you part of just another organization, you know, that has check boxes and all that crap? The wellness aspect of it, man, I'm tell you what, I mean, if we're gonna go to battle together and we're gonna see the most horrible things imaginable, we gotta be able to confide in each other. And if we can't do basic things like be together as family, why would I trust anybody with the trauma that I had? And Dane, to be completely transparent, that wedding was right a year after I'd went through a period where I wanted to kill myself, and nobody in the firehouse knew about it because I didn't trust them. I didn't trust to tell them that. You know, there was one guy I did talk to, and he led me into the whole EAP process, and the EAP process was a joke, complete joke. It was a 1-800 number of why are you calling me? It's late. I'm telling you, dude. Faith carried me through that season, but there's also other people outside of the organization, the firehouse, that carried me through it. But man, I'm gonna tell you what, there's the best people I know, then the best fire departments are, well, I'll take it back. The best fire companies that people I talk to, they're different than the fire department. Does that make sense? Like they don't adopt everything the fire department tells them to, but they're part of a fire company that's tight knit. And it's like, you know, it's not a fraternity, it's not a secret society. It's not, man, you're family, you're part of this. We endured some pretty bad things together, and we're going to keep going through it together. Some of the young guys in the first probie class that we taught here at our department, not even a month out, they saw one of the worst accident scenes they've ever seen, where there's basically pieces of bodies everywhere. And that took us closer together. You know, it's like I didn't want them to see that. Like we covered them up. Like it was like shielding your kids, you know, shielding their eyes. Like, hey, don't look at that. You go stand right over there and don't come over here. That's what being for each other is. Like, look, I care about their 30-year mental health enough to make them not look at something like that. And I didn't, and obviously, like, I came out a little different, but I was exposed to that stuff in my first year. I saw burned up bodies, I saw pieces of people, and it was just part of it. It was, and nobody told me to do that. Nobody said, hey, you got to do this, it'll make you tough. They didn't do that. It was, but nobody said, hey, you might want to protect your mental health for the next, 15, 20 years by limiting how much of that you see. So I think that's part of it too, is, we got to limit what we see. There's certain things we have to see, and there's certain things that I don't want those guys to ever see. It's my job to step into that point and say, hey man, it's not worth seeing. But does that make sense? Maybe I don't know if I answered that right.
No,
But,
you did. You did. You're good. You're good, man.
that's something I feel like we've got to do better of, is, just being there for those guys and recognizing those things early, is saying, okay, there's things that you see, and there's things you don't need to see. I don't want, I'll be honest, Dan, like my biggest fear in life right now is having a kid. And I'm being completely honest. My wife, we're finally in the talk. We're finally in the talk of having kids now, more seriously. One, because we've been married for 4 years, and we're not getting any younger. But I'll be honest, man. Everything you said at the very beginning, before this question was asked, is exactly why I'm afraid to have a child. And along with, other things, maybe my generational curses might carry in. I don't know. I mean, I feel like I've been healed of that stuff, but I'm so scared to death of raising a child in today's society when we have. I mean, you saw the presidential debate recently. I'm not going to say anything about that, but I don't want my kids having to deal with that. I don't want them going into school being bullied, and at the same time, turn around and wonder if the kid that's 9, 10 years old has a gun in their backpack ready to blow someone's head off, because they can cry nowadays and say, "Well, I like G.I. Joes, but Timmy's picking on me." Oh, well, that's okay. You can still stay in class, but they got a gun in their backpack and they carry it because they want to hurt somebody. It's like, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole, but I am afraid to have kids now. But at the same time, you're a solid leader. You know what you're telling your 5-year-old is the right things. You've been raised around good parents that they're teaching their kids. I feel like I'm going to have that as well. So my fear is a lot less now, knowing that I'm surrounded by the men and the women and the firehouses I've served in that can help me guide, and direct, my kids one day. So that's part of it too, is, if we're going to raise families in our own homes, the firehouse is a part of that. I want my kids to look forward to coming to the firehouse and seeing daddy, but then seeing Uncle Ryan, and Uncle Jake and Uncle John, like they're, all these dysfunctional uncles are going to help raise my kids. It's like, I want them to experience that.
No, that's, first of all, man, I'm appreciative of you being open to that, because not a lot of people would let that out. And secondly, the fact that you're still here today is a testament. Your faith is a testament as to why you're still here. So first of all, man, thank you for sharing that, because it's not uncommon for us to go through our social media, man, and you see a death resulting from traumas from whatever that person experienced, and their only thought to themselves was, well, if I do this, I am my family or my friends are better off. You know what I mean? Like, that's the notion going through their head. Maybe signs are missed. I don't know. I'm not trying to point blame. You know what I mean? But we need to pay attention to when an employee we have is like, hey, someone, let me just not, I don't even have to be do it out around people. I can just, like, they're outside. I go up to them just one-on-one and go, hey man, like, are you good? Yeah. All right, cool. Just checking to make sure that, you seem like you've been a little off. If you want to talk, extend that olive branch of, I'm here to talk if you want to. But as I always say, whenever an individual does that, don't say that and the person comes up to you, and then as soon as they leave, you call or make a text or let everybody else know, hey, this person's going through, like, you know what I mean? Like, then you have fucking killed the trust that is supposed to be there. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I thank you for still being here, man. Like, there's a purpose for you. And as far as the kids, dude, trust me, me and my wife, we waited, I think we waited like 2 years after we got married to try. And granted, we're only having one, but you just got to go with it. And you just teach them the ways, and you just hope and pray like they can make it through Which is very hard because every other freaking week or month you're seeing a special report about a damn school shooting, and you're just like, okay, here we go again. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just, I don't need to say it to you, but your faith that you have, like, everything happens for a reason. Put everything in God's hands.
Yeah, that's solid. And believe me, you're not the only person that said it. And you know, it's kind of one of those, I know, I'm just afraid to do it still. You know, and you know, and obviously your life changes a little bit, you know, and I'd be lying if I said that I'm not afraid of that change either. You know, I've been on my own most of my life. My wife has been the longest roommate that I'll ever have. And I never want that to change. And I don't want our marriage to change. I don't want things to be different. But anyway, that's just me personally though. But no, you're
No,
100%.
it is going to change. I will say, like, once you bring a little one, like, all the attention and focus goes to that. Be prepared to deal with a lot of sicknesses. My God, they're like germ buckets, but you just learn. Like, for me, man, like, what I do is, like, I don't kiss my daughter anywhere near her, like, mouth or her cheeks. I kiss her on her forehead because it's like, I love you, but I don't know where the hell you've been today, what you put on your face. So, like, we're good there. But
I get it.
seriously, man, no, I really appreciate you coming on, sharing your story. This I think the listeners can find some true value as to why you shouldn't be complacent, why you should be open to outside training. You don't know it all. If you're having, you know, if you're having notions that you want to be closer to whatever your faith base may be, man, go ahead and do it. Like, everybody lives one
Absolutely.
life, and the main thing that I got away from this interview was you need to do what's good for you. You don't need to explain shit to nobody else. As long as you're okay with your decision and your loved ones and your family's okay, to me, it's like, screw everybody else. Because opinions, like they say, opinions are like assholes. Everyone's got them. So whatever. You know what I mean? But I want to throw a shout out to Andrew Pristak for putting me in contact with you. Dude, like, this has been solid, man. I truly appreciate it.
No, this means a lot, and you know, I want to give a shout out to Andrew, Michael Taylor, Craig Hicks, Adam Cordell, Josh Frederick, you know, all Dixie Firemanship, the guys who helped mold me, you know, and get me here, and you know, and just because I didn't say their names doesn't mean they're not here, but there's a lot of people, Danny, that got me here and that are still holding me here. You know, that I feel like in a lot of ways, you know, mentors and people that you surround yourself with. I'm sure there's a better analogy by a better published speaker than me, but you know that they hold you up all the time, and people just don't realize that. You know, they don't realize that they're part of that hand. And if you ever lose one of them, whether it's they died or that you just don't talk to them anymore, that's part of you that's lost that you'll never get back. You know, and I want to say to everybody that's listening to you that if you got those people that you need to be reaching out to thank, you know. A simple phone call, 5 minutes is worth a lifetime. You know, I can't tell you how many people that have called me over the years that just wanted to call me, and it was like that was way more impactful than a text message. Don't even get me started on Facebook and Instagram. It's like, you know, that even like a handwritten note. Like I got a handwritten note from a guy a long time ago saying thanks, and it's like who does that? Like
Right. Right.
being intentional. I guess what I'm trying to say is. When we got people that are intentional, man, that goes a long way. And but I appreciate this, and I appreciate all the guys who got me to this point to talk to you. And this means a lot to me. And again, I still think you could have picked way better people. So,
Yeah, man.
but you're killing it, Danny. The few podcasts I've listened to. I mean, you've got some. I love the fact that you're going after people that we may never hear about, and it's cool to have been learning about more and more people in the fire service that we need to know about. So I appreciate everything you're doing, and it's you're making a huge impact, you know, with the
No,
things that you're putting out. So thank you for that.
man, I appreciate it. And, like, you know, like I said, it's one of those things. It's I love talking to firemen, and what I've come to realize is you don't have to be, and I feel like it's like the way society has constructed our brain to think, like, you have to be Mr. or Mrs. Popular to have something to say. And it's like, no, the fire service is so vast and grand, so many different organizations out there. You can't know everything out there, but the way I look at it is there is somebody out there that's making a huge difference to their organizations, to themselves, to their families, that's representing what the fire service needs to be. And this is what I'm doing. So, like, I don't look at, I know, some podcasts will look at their numbers, their number of downloads, sponsorship. I don't care for any of that. I just want to talk to solid individuals that care about the job. Like, all that may be cool, whatever for them, but like, that's not how I'm programmed. I don't need to, I've never been Mr. Popular. I'm okay with being an outsider. I'm okay with people going, well, who does this guy think he is interviewing all these people? I'm just a dude that's out here interviewing guys and gals that love the job. So thank you for accepting the invite, man. And I appreciate those words.
Yeah, man, you're doing solid stuff.
Thank you, man. I'm gonna let you go, but this has been really enjoyable, man. So I just, like I said, I gotta say it again. Thanks for spending some time out of your day to spread the good word. As I say, spread the gospel, man, about the fire service.
Absolutely. And I feel like there's so many other things that I could have talked about and I could have elaborated on more, but this was a
We're good, man.
I
It's
thought
genuine.
I great.
It's
It was it
genuine.
felt good.
We keep it organic, man. We keep it organic. If you want to come on later on, we can always do a part two, man. I'm always down for that too. So,
I'm never gonna say no to an invite. So like I said, if you want to waste some time with me, I'm all for it.
right, pal. You have a good day.
Right, Danny, thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.